Watanabe and colleagues. 2026, provocative study. Neural signatures of human psychological resilience driven by acute stress challenges our understanding of resilience. It shifts our framing from how well we handle the stressor to how effectively our brain reorganized itself during the hour following a stressor. The takeaway. The popular view treats resilience as something you display in the moment. The person who stays calm under pressure, keeps their head during a crisis, or bounces back quickly the moment the threat passes. On that view, the biologically resilient individual is the one whose stress response is smaller, shorter, or better controlled while the stressor is actually happening. Assessment, training, and clinical intuition have largely followed that assumption. Catch someone at peak stress, and you have your window. Watanabe et al., 2026, challenged that framing directly. Resilience is not the absence of stress, nor a snapback reflex. In Watanabe et al. S., 2026, multimodal imaging study, the most diagnostically useful neural markers of resilience did not emerge during the stressor itself. They emerged roughly 1 hour afterward. At that point, more resilient participants showed greater default mode network and posterior hippocampal activity, whereas less resilient participants showed stronger salience network connectivity and higher high beta and gamma EG power. For biofeedback and neurofeedback practitioners, that timing entirely reframes the clinical question. The moment that tells you the most about a client's regulatory capacity is not the first spike of distress. It is the recovery window, when the brain actively reorganizes its networks. What's the science? Acute stress is a short-lived challenge that sets off a coordinated mobilization across the brain and body. Two of its best-known drivers are the sympathetic nervous system, which triggers rapid physiological arousal, and the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal, HPA, axis, a hormone cascade that culminates in cortisol release. Beyond these classic stress pathways, acute stress also reshapes how large-scale brain networks communicate with one another. The salience network detects what matters most in the environment. The default mode network supports internally directed thought and autobiographical processing, and prefrontal regions modulate attention and emotional responses. Under stress, the balance among these networks shifts in ways that differ markedly between individuals. The broader neuroscience literature had already established that stress biology unfolds across distinct temporal phases. Corticosteroids can exert rapid effects through non-genomic mechanisms, acting within minutes without requiring gene transcription, and slower effects through genomic mechanisms that alter cellular signaling over the course of an hour or more. In human neuroimaging work, those slower cortisol effects were linked to normalized responding to aversive stimuli and altered medial prefrontal coupling, patterns more consistent with recovery than with initial alarm. More recent work confirms that only the slow cortisol window improved the voluntary downregulation of negative emotion. That context makes the one-hour window identified by Watanabe and colleagues biologically coherent rather than coincidental. How did they do it? To trace recovery across time, the authors enrolled approximately 100 participants in a structured laboratory stress protocol and measured multiple biological signals before the stressor, immediately after, and at intervals up to 1.5 hours later. They combined self-report measures of perceived stress with two complementary brain imaging methods, functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI, which estimates neural activity by tracking blood oxygen level dependent, BOLD, changes, and electroencephalography, or EEG, which captures scalp-recorded electrical activity with millisecond precision. They also monitored heart rate, respiration, pupil diameter, and cortisol across the same time course. Acute stress was induced with a cold pressor test, a standardized laboratory task in which participants submerged a hand in ice-cold water for 2 minutes. What did they find? The immediate post-stress period was not the most revealing window. Self-reported stress levels did not map cleanly onto concurrent biological signals, and brain and body measures showed only modest differentiation between groups right after the stressor. The clearest separation between more resilient and less resilient participants emerged approximately 1 hour later. At that point, the two groups showed opposing patterns across major networks. more resilient participants exhibited greater default mode network and posterior hippocampal activity, while less resilient participants showed stronger salience network connectivity and elevated high beta and gamma EEG power. Machine learning classification confirmed that the one-hour time point provided the most information for distinguishing resilience profiles in the full multimodal dataset. The EEG findings reinforced the imaging picture. Changes were most pronounced over prefrontal regions, the anterior cortical territory that supports planning, working memory, and top-down emotion regulation. That convergence across modalities suggests that resilience is not simply a matter of having a milder initial reaction. It depends on active regulatory processes that take hold during recovery, and those processes leave measurable traces in both network connectivity and cortical oscillations. What's the context? Herman et al., 2011, demonstrated that stress-related noradrenergic activity, meaning arousal signaling driven by noradrenaline, prompts a large-scale reconfiguration of neural network interactions. In a prospective longitudinal design, Zhang et al., 2022, showed that acute stress-induced changes in salience network coupling predicted later increases in perceived stress and clinician-rated trauma symptoms, whereas hormonal and subjective measures did not carry the same predictive weight. The timing finding most directly impacts clinical and performance practice. DeClode et al., 2005, argued that corticosteroids shape adaptive brain responses by acting through receptor systems that influence both network dynamics and downstream neural processing. Hankins et al., 2010, showed that hydrocortisone rapidly dampened amygdala reactivity but took longer to normalize responses to negative emotional material through altered medial prefrontal coupling. Pan et al., 2023, similarly found that only the slow cortisol window was associated with improved downregulation of negative emotion. Taken together, these studies argue that the hour following a stressor is a neurobiologically active phase in which the brain navigates the transition from vigilance to regulation, and the quality of that transition distinguishes resilient from less resilient individuals. Across this body of work, a consistent picture emerges. Acute stress does not simply turn arousal up and then down again. Hermans et al., 2011, established that noradrenergic signaling during stress triggers a large-scale reconfiguration of neural network interactions, meaning the brain reorganizes its functional architecture rather than merely amplifying a single alarm signal. Zhang et al., 2022, extended that insight prospectively, showing that stress-induced changes in salience network coupling predicted later trauma symptoms and perceived stress more reliably than hormonal or subjective measures did. Watanabe et al., 2026, add the critical temporal dimension. The most informative neural markers of resilience do not peak during or immediately after the stressor, but emerge roughly 1 hour later. When more resilient individuals show a shift toward default mode and hippocampal activity, while less resilient individuals remain locked in salience network dominance and high-frequency oscillatory patterns. The cortisol literature explains why that hour matters biologically. DeClode et al., 2005, argued that corticosteroids shape adaptive brain responses through receptor systems that influence both network dynamics and downstream neural processing across different timescales. Hankins et al., 2010, demonstrated this concretely. Hydrocortisone rapidly dampened amygdala reactivity, but the normalization of responses to negative material through altered medial prefrontal coupling required substantially more time. Pan et al., 2023, confirmed that only this slower cortisol window was associated with improved downregulation of negative emotion. Together, these findings converge on a single conclusion. The hour following a stressor is not a period of passive recovery. It is a neurobiologically active transition phase, and the quality of that transition, how effectively the brain moves from vigilance toward regulation, is what distinguishes resilient from less resilient individuals. What's the impact on our understanding of resilience? These results extend to substantial literature showing that acute stress reorganizes brain network architecture rather than simply amplifying a uniform arousal signal. If the most discriminating neural markers of resilience appear during recovery rather than during stress, then resilience may be less about the character of your stress response and more about the quality of your regulatory rebound. The question shifts from how did you handle the stressor to how effectively did your brain reorganize itself in the hour that followed. That is a substantially different target, both conceptually and clinically, and it aligns with the cortisol timing literature, which shows that genomic hormone effects on emotion regulation unfold over a delayed window rather than at the moment of peak arousal. In practice, a clinician working with a medical student after a high-stakes simulation or with a manager after a tense negotiation may gain more clinically useful information from a structured HRV recovery check 45 to 75 minutes after the event than from an immediate post-event snapshot alone. For neurofeedback practitioners, the EEG findings point toward a clinically actionable target, supporting clients in moving out of sustained high arousal oscillatory states and toward more flexible prefrontal regulation and network balance. Direct evidence for neurofeedback in everyday acute stress recovery remains limited, but the PTSD literature offers a useful translational bridge. A practical application is to evaluate whether neurofeedback improves recovery trajectories over the 45 to 75 minutes following a stressor, not only whether clients feel calmer during the training session itself. In clinical practice, this reframing changes how sessions might be structured. A client who leaves a demanding oral presentation saying, "I'm fine," may still carry measurable physiological activation an hour later. A first responder who looks composed after a high-stress call may show impaired autonomic recovery or persistently elevated fast-wave EEG activity well into the subsequent hour. The implication is operational. Assessment and training may be substantially more informative when they explicitly capture the delayed recovery window, not just the stress peak. 5 takeaways. 1. Resilience appears to be a delayed recovery process rather than an instant rebound, with the most informative biological differences emerging about 1 hour after the stressor, not immediately. 2. The period approximately 1 hour after acute stress may be the highest yield window for identifying adaptive versus maladaptive recovery patterns, and clinical assessments timed to that window may outperform immediate post-stressor snapshots. 3. Large-scale network balance among the salience network, default mode network, hippocampus, and prefrontal cortex appears central to resilience, and disruption of this balance during recovery is associated with prospective risk of symptoms. 4. Immediate self-report is an imprecise index of biologically meaningful recovery dynamics. Subjective stress ratings often fail to capture the network-level reorganization that distinguishes resilient from less resilient individuals. 5. Biofeedback and neurofeedback may offer the most clinical leverage when they track and train the recovery window rather than focusing exclusively on the moment of peak stress.